podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Here's the agenda for the podcast. My goal is to keep it around 40 minutes and keep it chock full of content. First, I'll lead with a quick introduction. Then, we'll give you the equipment check, where we talk about some piece of a technology or other collateral running stuff. Each show will be wrapped around a featured segment, where we interview someone interesting from our running world. I'll follow that with a quick tip derived from my centuries of running experience. We'll wrap it up with some music of our guest choosing from the PodSafe Music Network. Some things we're not going to do. I'm going to try to avoid recording myself while running. All that heavy breathing is just a little creepy for me. And there'll be no extended monologuing. I'm going to try to keep to the facts. If you want the emotional content, you can visit my blog, the Runnerati blog, at www.runrunlive.com. Please leave me an audio comment at, and you better write this down, or better yet, program the number into your cell phone, 206-339-7804, or send me an email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. And thanks for listening. Let me know what you think. Plus, you know, the more comments you leave, the less you have to listen to me talk. So, are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run. Hey folks, welcome to episode 5. This is Chris. I'm going to finish up my interview with Mike from Loco Running today, www.locorunning.com. He's going to talk about some of his races. Mike's got some good shoes here. You know, I've run a couple of Bostons in his shoes. I like the Carambas. It's a nice, simple, light, cushioned shoe. So I got no complaints there. I wouldn't be talking about products if I didn't use them. So there you go. I've been working on my ultra training. It's starting to ramp up a little bit. I did 3.5 hours yesterday, which was Saturday, another 3 hours today. So, you know, somewhere 40-plus miles on my feet. It's pretty interesting. I mean, yesterday I was losing a lot of fluids. I was doing like 40 ounces an hour. And I don't really know how I'm supposed to carry enough water for a 9-hour race at that rate. I'll have to push a wheelbarrow or as Nigel from Running from the Reaper would say, pull a trolley behind me with a few gallons of water in it. I'm going to treat you to a nice recipe from my friend Anthony today on his energy treats, his endurance treats, which are really interesting. I've been eating those. I think that's why I was drinking so much water. But stay tuned. You're going to love it.
And now for the equipment check.
It's Chris out in the rail trail down Cape Cod. I think I'm in Brewster. I'm not sure, but that's the Harwich Brewster Road you hear behind me in the rail trail. A lot of people out on their bikes today, letting Furboy here go for a swim to cool down. Even though it's drizzly out on this 5th of July, it's still pretty humid. So I'm letting Furboy take a little wade here, scare up some of the mussels in the shallows here. Nice, pretty clean lake, Long Pond in Harwich. I think that's what this is. But anyhow, I got a couple tips for you today. First one is, you know, when you're training, you drink a lot of sports drink and eat a lot of sports bars. Best place I found is go to the club stores, and you get those big boxes of power bars for like $19.99, which makes them less than a buck a piece. And you get the big, like, jars of Gatorade, and you can mix your own. Then you can make it any strength you want and reuse your bottles. Save them out of the landfill, and save a lot of money too. So you can batch the stuff up, make big bottles of it. But the other tip I have for you today is these rail trails. Any place you go, there's going to be rail trails. There's a ton of them in the U.S. I run one in Groton, There's another one in Bedford that I run on, the Minuteman Trail, and they're nice because they're nice and flat. I mean, they're boring. If you train everything on a rail trail, you're going to get killed in the actual race you're going to run because no race is that smooth or flat. But this one down here, they just resurfaced. It's beautiful. It's like a landing strip. You got to be careful. You got to leash the dog most of the time because a lot of kids, a lot of guys on their bikes playing Lance Armstrong, so you got to be careful. Not everybody knows the rules. Buddy doesn't know the rules. He keeps trying to run down the middle of the rail trail. I think it's because he's from Scotland originally. But if you go to a website called railstrails.org, here's some guys biking behind me.
He went as far as I go on a Saturday, he would go 27 miles.
Hear that guy? Yeah. This rail trail goes all the way up to Provincetown. It's 60-something miles long. I've never made it that far. But it's great for biking, great for running. So railstrails.org. Nice surface. A little patch of grass usually along the side that you can have the dog run in. And it's pretty good. All right. Have a great day. See you out there.
And now for our featured interview.
So, hey, so tell me how you ended up starting a shoe company.
Well, it's one of these things where you, in your life, you live in a cubicle, and you go to work every day for 10 hours, and you know, I was working for a big company that made networking technology, and I just figured I really didn't care one way or the other whether they made a better switch or a better network security device or anything. And so I always had in the back of my mind to start a running shoe company, and I wanted to do something related to running. And I always have these friends that say, you know, oh, if I can only make a living off of doing something related to runners and running, I'd love to do that. So we just took the plunge and decided to try and do it. And it was the right, you know, it was the right time. And my kids weren't in college yet, and I had a little bit of savings, so we just went ahead and did it.
Great.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. I mean, we're a little bit past 4 years, and this is the first year that we turned a small profit. The first 3 years, we lost a little bit of money, but it wasn't too bad. So, you know, right now the economy is a little bit difficult because people have to choose between filling their car up with gas or getting a pair of running shoes. So I hope that doesn't last too long because that puts a crimp in sales for everything, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think we're definitely in the throes of a recession here, or whatever you want to call it. I'm seeing the same thing. What that tends to do, though, is it pushes people into the right-priced products as opposed to the sort of upper, not premium, but the upper-level products, right? So
yeah.
they make a decision for an $80 shoe instead of a $100 shoe.
Right.
The people who are buying the $150 shoes are still going to buy the $150 shoes because they don't care about money.
Right. So, so we hope that, I think people now are just kind of a little bit in sticker shock from gas prices, so they delay their shoe purchases. But I think eventually they have to just accept that it's a cost of going any place or just go less places, and so that you still have money to afford your real sport running. So.
Yeah, so I noticed about you is that you don't seem to ever sleep. You've got, like, McGilvery syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
That every race I'm at, either you're there or one of your guys is there, and, you know, you're up at crack of dawn going to some event or doing something. So seems
like...
Yeah,
well, it's a tough gig. I get to go to races and talk to runners and sell a few shoes and see races all the time. So, you know, it's, you know, sometimes I say, why are you going to those? I don't know. It's kind of fun to do it sometimes. Sometimes it's a headache to pack everything and go out, but most of the time it's fun to go see all the runners and races and stuff. So
pack the big shoe.
Pack the big shoe, that's right.
The big shoe. If you ever see Mike at a race, you'll know it's him because he's got a big shoe, big 5 foot thong.
Big shoe, size 100, yeah. Well, yeah. we determined that the best promotional thing we can do for our brand also, and the way to support running is to create our own races, and so we've been rather successful with that and creating some races in New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont. Actually, we got one 10 days from now up in Stowe, Vermont.
What's that?
That's the Stowe 8-miler. That's a real classic race. It's been around for 25 years, and the race directors kind of got tired of putting it on. They wanted to do other things with their life, and so they looked around for somebody to take it over, and we took it over.
Yeah, we've got a couple of those as well. You know, the race directors just run out of steam, and it's a great race that everybody loves, so you want to take it over.
Yeah, there are just so many things involved in a race, logistics and making sure the town is behind it and getting the volunteers and the prizes and the food. And if you don't have a whole bundle of energy to put into it, it can become a tedious chore. Because, you know, it's not that it's a thankless job, but it's kind of like people just take things, expect things when they come to a race. And you know, you want everybody to have a good time when you come to a race and it to be safe and fun and have good food afterwards and the timing to be good and your results to be accurate and everything that's involved is, you have to pay attention to all the details. Otherwise, the runners won't have as good a time.
Yeah, a lot of that's out of your control. You know, I'm involved with the Groton Road race.
Uh-huh.
And you see, you know, the best laid plans sometimes get pushed off by weather events or crazy people. One of the things I was thinking about this week is that race directors are sort of the unsung heroes of our sport because, you know, they get all the grief and put all the work in. But if you look at all the great stories of people who have taken up running and have made a healthy lifestyle change, you know, there's a race involved there somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a race story there somewhere that helped them along that path, and that race wouldn't be there unless some poor race director didn't step up and say, yeah, I'm going to work 80-hour weeks for the next 2 months.
Right, to get the race going.
All right, so, and the other one, I remember you guys were doing that, you're doing the Must Run for Beer series.
The Will Run.
Something on that.
Yeah, that was that was interesting in that, we only had 200 people in our series, and we had a series finale and invited everybody, and we had 800 people come to the final race. So it was like, I think people like the idea of the Will Run for Beer shirt, beer associated with a race, and it was just the biggest party I'd ever thrown. It's funny nowadays. If you used to be in running long ago, you used to go to a race and there'd be 100 to 200 people there, and they were all serious runners.
Yep.
Hardcore. And you knew 80% of them, and you raced against them week after week, month after month, year after year. And you'd go to a race and you'd hang out afterwards for an hour or two and chat and. And there weren't prizes or anything. It's just that was your social thing. Well, now when you go to a race, a lot of times when the race is done, people are gone in 30 to 45 minutes.
Yep.
You know, they get some food and they check to see if they won anything, and then they leave. But we had a Will Run for Beer race series, and the race was at 11, and we still had 150 people there at 3:30 in the afternoon. And they would have still been there except we had a downpour. But it was like people were just hanging out, and they had lawn chairs. They were sitting around talking and chatting and drinking beer and eating food. And it was just a really great party with a run before it, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, and the other interesting one you guys, I think what you guys did last year, is the one-man race, whatever that was.
Yeah, the Maine Coast Half Marathon is the only all-women's half marathon in New England. We had almost 1,000 women register last year.
Wow!
And
the half marathon's a good distance now.
Yeah,
it's
a great distance that a lot of people can do. That it doesn't, you don't have to change your entire lifestyle to do it like you do in a marathon. But you definitely have to be in serious shape to do it. But it's not as much of a time commitment. But you still have to be in good shape to do it, which is good.
Yeah, it's not going to kill you.
But we wanted to put on an all women's race because if you've ever been to an all-women's race, you just see the level of excitement is just so high. The women, the camaraderie between the women, they just get so excited and they just kind of let loose, and there's just this feeling of joy of all these women running together that's different than when you have men in a race.
Yeah.
And it's hard to put into words, but it truly is. If you the race, we had 800 women in the starting line, and when the gun went off and just the cheering and the yahoos and everything, seemed like there were 3,000 women there. It was just that loud and that exciting. But anyway, what happened was I wanted to put on an all-women's race, but I was getting heat from some local friends and runners. So I want to run. You know, they're guys.
Right.
And my wife just said, well, somebody's going to hop in. And I said, yeah, that'd be one lucky guy that just hops in or registers and doesn't realize it's an all-women's race. I said, well, that's one lucky guy. I said, well, we should make a lottery out of this.
Yeah.
And let him run officially. And so it just became kind of a fun part of the race, and I said, well, I want to make sure the lucky guy doesn't take over. It's like people call it the lucky guy race. Says, no, it is a women's, all-women's race, and we do allow one lucky guy by lottery to hop in, and he has this entourage of women that run with him, and it's really funny. I mean,
how did that guy do this year?
He ran very well. He ran slower than he normally did because his girlfriend was there and she wanted to run with him. So he says she has the keys to the car, so he politely ran in her face and just enjoyed the whole thing, cheering and waving the whole time. He had a great time. They ended up becoming engaged after that race, I understand. So
there you go. Running leads to love.
Experience.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. Actually, it's sort of a marketing coup there that you sort of backed into thinking about that, you know, because you got all the guys involved, too, even though it's a woman's race. And
yeah.
800 women on a first half marathon like that is just amazing.
Yeah, from all over the place, yeah.
I can remember the days we couldn't get 800 people to run in a race, you know, unless it was, you know, Boston or one of those things, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, to put in... perfect example would be this. We put on a race in Newmarket, our half marathon.
Yeah.
The first year we had 1,700 people sign up.
Yeah.
That's just as big as a Boston Marathon was about 25 years ago.
Yeah, people don't realize the exponential growth in our sport. I was reading something, it was something by the Roadrunners Club of America's stats that said in 1980 there were 25,000 marathon participants, and
mm-hmm.
now it's like a million.
Yeah.
So I used to live in Newmarket.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, I used to live in the apartments out there when I went to UNH Durham for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For my undergrad.
Oh, good.
So, beautiful country. Love it out there. Up in Portsmouth, out by the bay.
Yeah.
Love it up there.
Yeah.
It's great. So, I could definitely live in New Hampshire. So, what else? What else you got in the calendar?
Well, we have, we're actually going to be changing our race or adding a race. We may be doing our race in Hampton that we did. We did a race in Hampton in the middle of February. We had like 1,000 people do a half marathon.
Does that run right down like, was it Route 1A there?
Yeah, right along Hampton Beach.
Yep. I've run the old Eastern States 20-miler there.
Right. It takes the prettiest part of that, about 3 or 4 miles, was right along the very pretty rocky coast and along the sandy beaches. But it goes actually through the town of Hampton, which is very pretty. The rural part of Hampton is just absolutely beautiful, lots of old homes and majestic trees and stone walls. And then it comes out right at the ocean at the prettiest point, very close to Rye, and then runs all the way back in. But we're hoping to start and finish it at the Hampton State Park, and if luck is with us, we may even have a concert the night before, a really cool rock concert. So,
that's good.
Yeah, because it could be a really neat race. I've seen them in other states. You know, they call them a rock fest, and basically you have a concert at night, and then the next day you have your half marathon. So combining music with running is always a good thing.
Yeah, you'll be the rock and roll marathon of New England.
That's right. We don't have one up here, so...
No, we don't.
But that one does bands all along the course, which we do music along our course, too, but that one actually does a lot of music along the course, which is very neat.
That's a wholly commercial enterprise, is my understanding,
mm-hmm.
that series. So kind of rubs me the wrong way, but it's just because I'm one of those old divers, right?
Yeah.
So what do you see as the biggest changes over the last, you know, decade in running and races?
Well, there's the most significant change has to be that running has become a purely recreational sport for 95% of the people out there.
Yep.
So if you go to, like, I went to the Big Lake Half Marathon, and I was, like, 54th place out of 1,500 people. And, you know, at the time that I ran, 7:30 pace or whatever it was, you know, I'm in the top 5% or something like that. So... The people that train reasonably seriously are you know, like the top, you know, 10 or 20% that train a lot and run fairly hard. And a lot of the other people, they're semi-serious about what they're doing, but they're doing it for health and fitness.
Yep.
More. So it's a participatory, you know, more, you know, it's participate in something and enjoy it, as opposed to being, you know, real serious heavy hitters that have to run 70 to 90 miles a week and, you know, weigh 110 pounds and stuff like that. So it's,
what's your best story from the last few years?
The last few years, just trying to think of a good run I did. When I was younger, we used to hold a running camp up in Vermont. And one day I got there, very late. I'd already set up the camp. I got there about 6 or 7 at night. I decided to go for a run. And I went for a run around this big mountain, and I got lost.
Yeah.
And so I'm running for about an hour, hour and a half, and there's like 30 kids out there all looking for me in flashlights. And it's just the coolest feeling to figure out where I am and come running back up the mountain and see all these kids that have been out searching for me.
You
and know
lot.
That you're alive and well.
Yeah. To make it out of the wilderness.
Yeah, or the same thing, with, I guess when I was younger, we'd just be running along and you'd see a power lines trail, and you'd be on a run that's 8 miles or something. You decide, I'm just going to take a right and go down that power line trail, and wherever it takes me, it takes me.
Yeah, I'm infamous for that, too, with the guys I run with, you know, of making those poor decisions late in a run. Oh, let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a 6-miler turns into a 12-miler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do that sometimes when I'm traveling, too. You know, I'll go to a new city, and I'll just go out of the hotel door and turn right.
Yeah.
And, you know, after about 40 minutes, I'll start seeing if I can figure out how to get back to the hotel.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a little scary, but it's always an adventure.
Yeah. So I just still appreciate the fact that I can run okay, because I think I've about almost 100,000 miles on my legs, and there's some people I run into, good old friends that, you know, had some injuries that have prevented from running at all. And, you know, sometimes you get bummed out when you can't run as fast as you'd like to, but then you realize you still can run and so can do a half marathon here or there and or 5Ks or 10Ks. And, you know, that's still a lot of fun. And that time doesn't matter. You know, what matters is that you're out there and you know, part of the community and presenting an example of being fit and staying fit and healthy to your friends and your family, and you know, that's just a really cool thing.
So if you had to put it into, you know, a sentence or two, why would you say that you run?
I run because I like the idea of being a runner. Because I think a person that's a runner usually exemplifies somebody that is aware and committed to being healthy. And a runner in the sense, especially like running outside, in that I really enjoy nature. I really like enjoy running trails and back roads and woods and things like that. And I run for the sake of being out there.
Yeah.
As well as the feeling of being fit. I love the idea of being really super fit, but I just like the idea of being out somewhere and just being part of nature and stuff. It's just kind of a thing that is that. Needed more by people nowadays, where we just surround ourselves with gadgets and things. I never run with an iPod or any of those things. It's just like when I want to be able to hear everything that's going on and see everything and smell and experience the outside. So that's I guess that's why it is.
So what's you get any tech at all that you've discovered that you like?
Technology?
Yeah.
I've started to take some I found that I sweat a lot when it's really hot out, and I have to kind of take in some, like, Enduralite capsules, as opposed to, like, drinking Gatorade, which has lots of sugar in it.
Yeah.
And find all the stuff and, like, a little pill, take water with one of these little pills that has the electrolytes and the potassium, all the stuff that you lose.
So you find those work?
Yeah, I find that makes a big difference for me, in that, you know, I just can't seem to get enough of that stuff into my system when it's hot out. So
right, and the symptoms are you start to get run down, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I finish an hour run and I feel like I need to take a nap. I'm just like beat up. And
right.
If they have one of those, I finish and 10 minutes later, I'm just fine. The other thing I find is that I have a massage guy that I go to once a month, and he just keeps things from getting out of control of things that get tight.
Then you don't have to stretch, right?
I stretch religiously. Every day, I actually time my stretches so I stretch like 8 minutes. Like, I know I just won't go out the door, because if I don't put my watch on it, I'll go out the door in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But if I put my watch on it, I can't go out until it's like 8 minutes. Because
right.
That way I know I'll get all the different quads and calves and everything else. I have kind of like a little routine.
Yeah. Well, that's good. If you can make it a routine so it's like brushing your teeth, then you'll just do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always have had an issue with stretching. I typically start stretching when something starts to hurt.
Yeah.
But the trails are helping on that. And plus, I'm not doing all that much speed work, and speed work is what really beats me up. So.
Yeah.
So what would your recommendation be for new runners, for people who want to get into our sport?
That really to enjoy it, you have to pay your dues first that, you know, you may not enjoy it as much as you'd like for the first 4 weeks or 6 weeks, but once you get into it, there's just nothing like it. It's something that you can do and be proud of, and do under almost any situation anywhere where you live. We have a guy that enters our races, but he's in Iraq, and he runs around his base and he submits his time to us.
That's great.
With his GPS, he says, "I want to race, and I want to have a goal to have a race, and it's 98 degrees there, and there are no races here." So he does that, and then we send him a shirt and a number, and it's just something that can really help you through, you know, a lot of parts of your life. I know there are a lot of people that have, you know, survived divorces and deaths and all sorts of things.
Yep.
Family members and stuff, by using running as kind of a crutch to get them through it. It's not really a crutch, but it's just kind of like something that really helps you survive in today's crazy world.
Yeah, and it's a lot more healthy than the alternatives, like, you know, losing yourself in the bottom of a whiskey bottle or something like that.
Yeah.
Or eating yourself to death.
Yeah.
Plus, you can eat whatever you want, usually.
Yeah, kind
of.
Almost, yeah.
Within the reason.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm going to tag some music onto the end of this podcast. What's your favorite music, Mike?
Born to Run is a great song.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that yesterday when I was out. I was out running in the trails. Right, it was like 90 degrees. It's crazy sweaty.
Yeah.
But I start wearing a bush hat. You know, something with the bandana hanging down the back to keep the flies off me.
Uh huh.
And I was thinking, you know, I can remember in the 80s, everybody ran with bandanas.
Oh yeah.
You know, rolled up bandanas.
Yeah.
As like sweatbands.
Yeah.
And I was picturing the cover of that. I think there was a Bruce Springsteen album where he was wearing one back in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking of Bruce Springsteen. So something like Bruce Springsteen.
Uh-huh.
We'll try to hook something like Bruce Springsteen on there.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Cool.
Well,
all right. Well, good talking to you, and thank you for doing this.
This was great. I will. I'll let you know how it turns out, and you keep running, and feel free to keep inviting me to these races. I'll make one.
Okay, that sounds
right.
Good. We'll see you there. Thanks, Chris.
All right, thanks,
right.
Mike.
Bye-bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
Hey, folks, we're going to now give you a little tip. I got a great tip for you. You know, I was talking to Mike earlier in the first episode about shoes not fitting right, and most people just assume that there's only one way to tie your shoes. If you look in the box that your shoes came in, typically there's instructions on different ways to lace your shoes for different problems. And there's ways you can lace your shoes to make them fit better. If they're loose at one point, you can, and without giving yourself lace bite on your shoes. So you should look into that. And also on the internet, if you just search for, you know, lacing running shoes, shoelaces, it'll give you some alternates there. Next thing I'm going to play is this sort of, as Steve Runner would say, a rambling diatribe. Even though I'm promised not to do it, a little bit of a monologue from my vacation down the Cape this last weekend when I was running out in Chatham Light. And after that, we'll close with some tunes because we're way ahead of schedule on this one. And next episode, I have an interview with Kevin Malloy, who was one of the founders of Cool Running. He's currently living in Sydney, Australia. He used to live out here near me in the town where I grew up, Groton, Massachusetts. And he founded the Groton Road Race and the Squanacook River Runners, which is my running club, and my hometown road race. And we're going to talk all about that. Kevin's got acres of running experience and race director experience to share with us. He's going to talk about his new marathon that he's starting up in Maui. So maybe he can give us some free passes to that, huh?
So I got a couple of podcasts under my belt, and I figured now's a good time to sit back and take the first look at what I want to do with this thing. What you hear in the background is the Atlantic Ocean. I am on the elbow of the United States of America here in Chatham, Massachusetts. I'm about an hour into my run. I'm not running. I'm walking now. But I'm definitely out beyond the point where there's any footprints beside my own. Just a lot of seashells and seals and other weird stuff out here. But nice place to run. You know, one of the things, I had listened to a lot of podcasts, running podcasts, and one of the things that I didn't really like was a lot of them seemed to just turn on the recorder and go running, which I thought was a little creepy. Especially you can hear at the point in the run where the chemicals start to hit and the person becomes all strange and spacey. What I want to do is I want to help people and bring some content, maybe some entertainment as well, but definitely some content. Because the way I learned how to run, the way I learned how to love running, the way I learned what to do, what not to do, was not only just by doing it, but also by hanging around with the people who have done it. And so I want to talk to those folks, and I think the main feature here is going to be the interview. And I'll also throw in some tips and some advice as well, just to give you some content. The one thing I'm concerned about is most of the people I know are kind of those crazy run-all-the-time type people, and I'd hate to discourage new runners or beginners, so I'm going to find a way to come up with some product that's for beginners as well, because that's really what I want, is I want to help people embrace the sport like we have and bring some new people into the sport. I think that's real important. So we're going to do the interview. And the other thing I hate with these podcasts is once people start talking, they just keep going. And it's, it ends up being an hour and a half long. And really, you don't have the time for that. Neither do I. So I'm going to hold it at 40 minutes, even if I have to break some of these cool interviews into two pieces. Yeah, who am I going to interview? Why do you care? Well, I'm going to interview some folks who have been out there and been doing it, some average Joes who have some cool stories. I'm also going to start interviewing some race directors. And, that's not from a commercial aspect. Obviously they're going to talk about their races. But I think race directors are sort of the unsung heroes. Because, how many people do you know where their best story starts with when they qualified at Bay State, And that race wouldn't exist unless Dee and Mark and those guys kept it going all these years. So, it's your local 5K. The person who has the courage to go out and do that, they probably indirectly influence hundreds of thousands of runners positively. So I think those race directors are an unsung hero. I don't mind if they push their races a little bit, just so we can learn, what inspires them. The other thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to do a whole lot of personal introspection here, doing a lot of why I run, why I feel awesome today, because, frankly, I think, my writing is a better medium for that, not my speaking. I am an advanced public speaker, certified, but I'm not gonna. That's a different kind of content. I'd rather use my writing to express those big emotions, because I feel that's a better tool. And if you want, you can go to my website. You see my blog. I'm trying to blog more now and keep my pieces to, 500 to 1,000 words instead of the normal 1,500 to 2,000 words that I usually did with my articles. I will have a spot where you can buy my book, because if you want to, that would be cool. That's my story of the mid-pack. A bunch of little stories that I put together. And it's okay, It's got flaws. I blame the publisher and the editor, not the author. But, of course, that's all the same person, right? So, hey, well, I got to get moving, man. I'm getting eaten alive by these greenheads out here. Things are vicious when I stop. I'm going to turn around and run back down the beach, follow my big-ass number 12 Saucony Trail Shoe footprints back to the car. Didn't bring the dog with me today. No dogs allowed on the beach. It was about high noon. It's overcast, though, so that's kind of cool. I'm not getting cooked, but it's still pretty steamy because it is July and it is high noon. But the nice sea breeze, always cool by the ocean. Jeez, these things are crazy, these greenheads. What the heck do they eat out here? How do they stay alive? I don't see any deer. There's no antelope. What's the deal? All right, I got to get moving. Hope you enjoy the Run, Run, Live podcast. And I'm going to enjoy making it. And I get to talk to a lot of my old friends. So we'll see you out there, my friends.
That's pretty funny. You can hear me slapping the flies in the background as I'm trying to make the recording. They're carrying me away. It was horrible. That's hilarious. So stay tuned next episode for Kevin Malloy And I found a piece of music here by a band called 27 Years. It's called Unbelievable. And it sounded a little Bruce Springsteen-y to me, in deference to Mr. St. Lawrence, Mike St. Lawrence of Logo Running. Or as I would say with my Quebecois friends, Mike St. Laurent. And so enjoy. We'll see you in the next episode.